You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation
and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, we have welcomed thousands of guests from over 30 countries, earning us over $1 million and garnering us thousands of five-star reviews.
We love sharing creative ways for your listing to stand out, serve your guests, and be profitable. Each episode, we will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry.
Or we will share our stories of our own experiences so you can implement actual improvements to your rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Before we dive into the content, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
You know how we're always on the hunt for awesome furniture, decor, and supplies for our short-term rentals?
We're going to let you in on our secret weapon, Manoan. They are a free platform for hosts that offers steep discounts on over 150 top brands. Think Wayfair, Article, Our House, Liza, Parachute, California Designed In, Public Goods, and Society 6. Plus, the ability to centralize all ordering and reordering needs to make tracking and bookkeeping a breeze.
I had my eye on gorgeous linens from Parachute, wanting to give our listing that wow factor with better quality that lasts. And my Manoan discount actually made it more cost-effective over the long run than the budget options requiring constant replacement. Seeing the savings, I naturally had to order more. All I had to do was head to their site, install their browser extension, which makes shopping so, so simple, and add items across partner brands to my cart with just a few clicks.
And when guests inevitably ask you about that awesome Lisa mattress that you purchased through Manoan, at a major discount, no less, you can point them to a custom digital storefront called Manoan Showroom. The best part? When guests shop their stay, you'll earn commission from hundreds of stores, including featured items you didn't purchase through Manoan.
So, head over to Manoan.com/TFV_podcast or simply click the link in our show notes to sign up. Let the savings and the earnings begin.
Hello, welcome back to another great episode. My name is Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are...
Thanks for visiting. Let's start this episode like we do each and every week, and that is celebrating you, our incredible listener, who is sharing their incredible property with us at strshare.com. You tell us everything you can about your short-term rental so we can share it here on the podcast. Annette, who are we sharing this week?
This week we are sharing at Roost North Rentals. And I am just swooning over this account. And it's ran by Carrie Dreyer. And I love it because she has behind it all, and it's her name, because she also runs a short-term rental group in Michigan. And I want to point out, hosts, business owners, the amount that y'all talk and worry and stress about social media too much. So I am going to lead you to Roost North Rentals. She's crushing it for inspiration. She has these great theme throughout: where to shop, where to go, where to eat, where to drink, events in the area. Do this. This is easy. Repost this. Share the love with your local businesses. When you have where to eat, tag them. When you have where to drink, tag them. Where you have to shop, tag them. This is where we want to. We never want to produce one piece of content for that one post. We want it to do three different things for us all the time. I want to go back to Roost North Rentals, though, the STR share. Check her out. I want you to see that the way that she's doing this. The other thing that I love, I actually want to talk to Sarah about bringing this in to our properties. She does a very curated itinerary. What you should do a Friday night after you check in, what you could do all day Saturday, and what you could do Sunday. Sarah and I we actually hire a travel designer when we travel out of the country to design our trips and give us an itinerary. Where to eat, what excursions to do. And we love her, and we love the itinerary she put together for us. And so I can't believe we haven't been doing this for our guests, but Roost North Rentals is doing this. She's telling you where to go get coffee, where to hike, where to grab lunch.
And I like that it's curated by day or arrival, because right, that does change things. Mm-hmm. Like if you check in late on Friday, because I know what you're going to say, like, well, I'm going to run out of ideas super fast. It's like, mm-hmm, well, no, if they check in after 10 p.m. on a Friday, If they check in, early, if they're lucky enough to get an early check-in, if they check in on a Saturday, like all the different variations are an opportunity to create different content.
Yep. And it's like 3 p.m. check-in. Like they're checking. So it's just.
That's cute.
And it's like if you give them one of your favorites, they will remember you forever. So this is really well done. Roost North, I hope you don't mind that I told people to go and get some major inspiration, maybe even
go stay with her.
Go stay with her. And I just, and this is something, so instead of making excuses and saying you don't know what to do for social media, there are so many short-term rental accounts out there that are crushing it. Use them. And then the last thing I want to say, repost. If something crushes it, repost it again. Repost it again. All right? But well done, Roost North Rentals and Carrie Dreyer. I told Sarah I want to be friends with you. So
let's she did.
Reach out.
She did. I have another tip for all of you, too, with these STR Share Sundays that we do, where we share you on Sunday on our Instagram, on our podcast, on our Thursday podcast. It's not just, first of all, you should be going to these people's Instagrams because I will tell you, Annette is a stickler for who we share. If we haven't shared you and you've sent your stuff in, it's because maybe you haven't posted in months and months, or because there's something not safe about your property and Justin Ford would have us if we shared you. So everyone who we share has gone through a level of audit so that you know you can actually learn they're doing something different. They're doing something creative. So go to these people's Instagrams and write something down that they're doing that you want to do in your business. And then also because today's episode is about the tax updates here in 2025, I want you to ask your CPA, if you were to spend a certain amount of money on going to another short-term rental for research to learn how you can make your short-term rental better, what was their check-in like? What sort of marketing material? What does their booking funnel look like? All those things. How can you approach 2026 more strategically when it comes to making your property better so that your property can make more and perform more optimally? Okay, so these people that we are sharing with you, seriously, if you can go stay with this host, you should learn what she's doing. Not even that what she's doing better than you. What is she doing different from you that you can bring into your own company and give your own spin to it? It's not copying either. You will inevitably give it your own spin because you are unique and how you deliver something is going to be nuanced in that way. Did you want to say something, Annette? You're approaching the mic.
No.
Okay. I don't want to.
I'm ready for today's.
I don't want to silence you.
No, I'm ready for today's episode.
No, I'm excited for today's episode. So we have back Amanda Hahn. She is a CPA and tax strategist who specializes in helping people use real estate to save massive amounts of money in taxes and keep their hard-earned money. And so she is very focused on real estate investors. And she is the founder of Keystone CPA. And we will put their information in our show notes because we know, we talked to a lot of you, it is hard to find a CPA, like Amanda says, who doesn't tell you what you can't do, but they help you strategize what you can do that is, of course, legal and within the tax laws and tax rules. And so on today's episode, we're actually going to talk about what's new for 2025 with the One Big Beautiful Bill and the different changes to bonus depreciation. And what was different from before, what's changed, what can we do now, what this means for us non-tax professionals, i.e. us short-term rental hosts. And we do ask Amanda for you specifically, because our listeners, you are all owner operators for the most part. Maybe you ascend into being a co-host or things of that nature, but you own your property and you operate it. And Amanda said something that shook both Annette and me because we just felt it to our core. You cannot make decisions without numbers. You cannot make decisions without numbers.
So none of us are immune to knowing our numbers.
None of us. And if you find yourself making excuses for not knowing your numbers, blaming someone else because they messed up your numbers, you're not a numbers person, you're going to have to get over all of that in order to make decisions. You're going to have to solve for that. Maybe it's hiring someone. Maybe it's firing someone, then hiring someone new. Maybe I don't know what it is for you specifically, but if you need to hear this today, hear it. You can't make decisions without numbers. And with that, let's bring on Amanda Hahn. Amanda, welcome back to the show. We have so much to talk to you about with this new big bill that's beautiful, big, beautiful bill.
our short-term rental community wants to know the good, the bad, the ugly, but ultimately they want to know the truth mm-hmm. behind it and what you are advising your clients on as it relates to taking all the benefits that are available to us as short-term rental operators, but also what we need to take into consideration along the way. So can you back it up for us? What changed this year specifically?
Oh my goodness, I have so many things. You know, I really don't like the name One Big Beautiful Bill. I actually thought it was a joke when it first came out. But what is really interesting about it, though, is that it is actually one of the most comprehensive changes in the tax bill in a long time, you know, in recent years. And so despite the name, it is actually pretty comprehensive. And what I really like about it is historically, when you see tax changes, there oftentimes is a sort of a targeted demographic or profile of what we're trying to incentivize, right? So a lot of bringing money back from foreign countries. So a lot of that was for corporations to bring back funds. So a lot of targeted towards, you know, solar companies or large corporations or super wealthy people. And so the One Big Beautiful Bill is, I think, unique from the perspective that it has a little bit of goodies for almost everyone, you know, lower income earners, like people who make tips mainly. There's, for the first time ever, tax-free tips where you can have part of your tip income be tax-free. Also brand new is tax-free overtime. And so that, you know, a lot of times, like when we say, oh, when we think overtime, it's not just for lower income or people starting out their careers. We have a lot of clients who are in the medical space that are working almost mandatory overtime, government workers that are on mandatory overtime. So for a piece of that to be, you know, completely tax-free income is super significant. And then, of course, we have all of the tax incentives, as you would expect, from the current administration for businesses, real estate, and all that good stuff, right? So it's kind of a more well-rounded where we see benefits for virtually anyone.
That's exciting because I think the things you just listed off there, the person listening, of course, they're going to be here as we dive into the short-term rental goodies, as you said. But they probably have a spouse or a family member or a kiddo who it's like, huh, I didn't even think about how this may have touched other people in my family. So everyone, if anything that Amanda just said to you is news to you, to make sure that you are talking to your tax professional, your CPA, whoever guides you, and making sure that you understand how that could affect those people.
Well, and also too, just like even outside of rental real estate, right? If you're a homeowner, or if you're just someone who lives in a high taxing state like California, New York, Hawaii, before the One Big Beautiful Bill, we were only allowed to write off up to $10,000 every year against our income when it comes to primary home property tax and personal state income tax. And the One Big Beautiful Bill basically quadrupled that. So now under new law, we can write off up to $40,000. So even if you're just like a homeowner, right? I don't own real estate yet. I just own my own home. There's tax savings from that perspective. But, you know, with anything in the tax world, all these things sound really great, but they all come with limitations. Mm. So child tax credit, all these tax-free tip, tax-free, there's always income threshold. And basically that's saying if you make too much money, then you're phased out. And at some point you don't get any of these benefits, right? That's traditionally how the tax law works. And these new tax perks are the same as well. And that's where the short-term rental investing becomes super, super powerful. You know, if you're a listener who's like, you know what, a lot of these benefits phase out when your income is close to $500,000 or more, but I make more than that, so I'm just going to tune out because I don't really care. It doesn't impact me. But with short-term rental investing and the tax loopholes, we have a lot of clients that are really cutting down their income because of real estate. And so not only are they saving taxes on regular real estate, but now their income is low enough where they're getting tax credits, like child tax credits and some tax-free money. So it's kind of a compounding effect. Like when you use the short-term rental loophole, now the doors open up potentially for a lot more tax benefits that you weren't able to touch before because your income was too high.
I have something to share, and I do not like the word loophole. It sounds sleazy. It sounds greasy. It sounds like you're doing something wrong. Why do they call it the STR loophole? Like, I'm just saying, it sounds like a hack. It sounds like something I don't want to be a part of. Like, the way that we identify with it, why did it get this name? And is it greasy, sleazy? Now I sound cheesy. Like, seriously, yeah. Like, what? I'm being serious, because when I hear something like that, it makes me nervous.
Yeah, it's a negative connotation.
It is a negative connotation. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. So why do you think it has this naming convention?
Yeah, and it's interesting because I don't know if I was the first person who termed it that. I might be, because we were doing short-term rental loophole for many years before Airbnb was like a big thing. You know, people just kind of had like vacation rentals. So I won't claim to be the founder of that word, but in the tax world, yes, this is kind of what we refer to it as. I also wish there was a better word for it.
Okay.
But the reason we refer to it as a loophole is because it works in a way that is sort of opposite what the traditional real estate tax law says. So traditional tax law for real estate, which applies to long-term rentals, midterm rentals, commercial real estate, self-storage, I mean, all of the regular rental real estate, right? The traditional rule is that if you're a high-income earner, and that's someone making $150,000 or more, your rental losses are considered passive, and which means that if we create these losses from write-offs and depreciation, we can only use it to offset passive income. Passive income from rental property, you know, other rentals I own or just other business investments I've made, I can offset that. But I can't offset taxes from my W-2 income unless if you're a real estate professional. There's a lot of different rules surrounding that. If it's, you know, your first time hearing it, we can spend some time diving into it. But effectively, to be a real estate professional, one of the requirements is you have to have more time in real estate than your job. So for any of you who still work full time, then, you know, almost impossible to be a real estate professional and, you know, use the losses against W-2 income. And so, but in the short-term rental world, if you invest in short-term rentals, we actually don't care how many hours you're working at your job. You don't have to be a real estate professional. You could potentially use short-term rental tax benefits against W-2 income. And the rules of what you have to do is just material participation, which is a lot lower threshold than the traditional, like, must quit my job. So that's the reason we call it a loophole, is because rentals are rentals. But if it's short term, we don't have to be a real estate professional. We don't have to quit our job. You know, real estate could be a side hustle and we could still use the benefit.
Okay. And then when you say material participation, can you define that?
Yeah. For the short term rental loophole, there's 7 different ways to qualify for material participation. But I think the vast majority of our clients we see meet one of the following 3. Okay. The first one is you have at least 500 hours on your short-term rentals. And that's if you're married, that could be you and your spouse combined. If you own multiple short-term rentals, you can actually combine your hours across the whole portfolio as well. If you don't have 500 hours, another way to meet it is you have at least 100 hours, but nobody else has more time than you. So you have 200, your cleaning crew has 100, landscaper has 50. Yeah, nobody else has more time. And then the third way is you have more hours than everyone else combined. So Amanda has 50 hours, nobody else did anything at all, I can still meet material participation. And again, the reason we care is because you have to meet those hours to be able to use rental benefits against all different types of income, W-2, business, crypto, you know, whatever your income of choice is.
And my understanding is you have to take copious notes about these hours. Like, you should be able to prove these hours. So, and for a lot of people, Amanda, okay, here's what I want to break down to before I get into all that. Can we also introduce this 100% bonus depreciation? Because that is also new this year in terms of depreciation isn't, but the 100% bonus depreciation is new. Could you take that back to like fifth grade level for us? What does that mean for us as short-term rental investors?
Yeah, sure. So when we invest in rental real estate, the IRS allows us to take depreciation on the building. And that's to say, hey, I bought a $500,000 building. Over time, there's going to be wear and tear in the building. And so the IRS typically gives us a standard number of years to kind of write off that $500,000. For short-term rental, usually 39 years. So take the building, divide by 39, that's what I'm writing off every single year. What we love about depreciation is that IRS doesn't really care what the property is actually doing in value. So it could be appreciating in value, but we're still writing it off. And also the depreciation calculation is based on the purchase price. So we don't care like what the down payment is or the loan is, it's just strictly purchase price. You know, in the tax world, beyond just taking the building over 39 years, you can do what's called accelerated depreciation or cost segregation. And that's where you have an engineering firm look at the building and they break out the components of the building into different aspects. So how much of that is really, let's say, appliances, right, within the property that I bought? How much of that is appliances? How much of that are fixtures, lighting fixtures, specialty plumbing, specialty electrical? And when I break those out, I can write them off faster. So rather than 39 years, maybe like a 5-year, 7-year, 15-year, right? So the shorter the year, the more I can write off initially. And bonus depreciation, and it's sort of like the supersized version of that, is saying, well, whatever you were going to write off over 5 years, I'm going to let you write it off immediately. And so that's where you hear people say, well, I bought a short-term rental and I wrote off $300,000, right? It's not like they lost $300,000, but they're using the tax code to create a paper loss of $300,000.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's what most of us listeners, including myself, see on social media, is like, oh, I made XYZ, but I had zero, you know, taxes at the end of the year because of the bonus depreciation. Here is my question about the cost segregation, the bonus depreciation. What happens, Amanda? I take all of that 100% depreciation in 1 year, and what happens the next year? Is it gone? Am I back to my normal tax status? I don't think people talk enough about what happens next. What if I need to sell that property the next year and I exercised all of that in 1 year? Like, when does it catch up? Are we kicking the can down the road? So what happens after we get this like huge tax win? What happens next?
Well, and that's a common misconception that after the first year, there's no more depreciation. Okay. Because the reality is, as much as we love to, if you buy a property for $500,000, you're not going to write off the whole $500,000. Even with accelerated depreciation, there's always going to be some stuff that's assigned to the building itself, right? So we can't just say there's no building. There's always still building.
Right.
And so in future years, you're still going to be depreciating the building. It's just not going to be as significant as the first year. And remember, the goal of accelerated depreciation is we're trying to front load as much as legally allowed into the first year. Every year thereafter, I'll still have some depreciation to offset my my rental income. Now, when you go to sell a property, okay, whether you took regular depreciation or accelerated depreciation, one thing to keep in mind is we can't double dip on the same write-off. So if I bought something for $500,000, I already wrote off $200,000. Now what I have remaining in my cost is $300,000, right? And so eventually when I sell, if I'm not going to use any tax strategies to defer my taxes like 1031 and offsets and things like that, if I'm just going to cash out and go into crypto, right? Then what I'll have to do is I'll say sales price minus $300,000 is going to be my gain. I can't say sales price minus five, my initial, because I already wrote that off. And that's what people refer to as depreciation recapture, right? Is we have to say, well, what we already took, we're going to pay taxes on that if there's gain involved. I'm not going to write it off again against the sales price of my property. Eventually cost segregation is not a best fit for every single person, right? You have to first work with your CPA to figure out, can you benefit from it? I meet a lot of people who, you know, hear about it, they go ahead and get it done. But if they don't have the hours to use the actual short-term rental loophole, the depreciation that you've accelerated actually gets trapped. So it's trapped in the year that you can't use it. And in the future, even if you do meet the hours, that tax benefit is always going to be trapped. And we don't get to use it all of a sudden against W-2 income. So I always tell people, before you go out and pay for cost segregation, talk to your CPA. Because the steps are, can I qualify to use the loss? If so, then I want to know what is the cost and the benefit to doing it, because those aren't free, right? You have to hire someone to actually do
it. That was my question, Amanda, and I hope I'm asking it the way that my brain is thinking about it. Is so it's not like cost segregation and material participation are separate situations. They work together as a tax benefit.
Let's talk about something that every short-term rental owner has to deal with: taxes. Every city and county has its own rules, filing deadlines, and systems. It's complicated, and it's easy to miss something. And if you do miss something, you could end up with penalties or surprise bills later on. That's why we recommend MyLodgeTax by Avalara.
They handle your filings, payments, and paperwork, so you stay compliant without spending hours trying to figure it out all by yourself.
Right now, TFE listeners get $100 off the setup fee for each new property added by December 31st, 2025.
Go to www.mylodgetax.com to book a demo and tell them TFE sent you to get the $100 off the setup fee.
Tax compliance doesn't have to be confusing. Let MyLodgeTax handle it for you. Again, that's www.mylodgetax.com to book a demo and tell them TFE sent you to get $100 off each property.
Is that correct?
Yes, for the most part, yes. Generally, if you meet material participation, and provided you have income to offset, right? I mean, if you have no other income, then maybe we don't care.
Right.
But if you have other income, you need material participation, then COSEC is a possibility. That's something we want to look into for this year. There are other times, though, we have clients who invest in Airbnbs that are just super profitable. And so if your property is super profitable, even though you don't meet the hours, we might still consider cost segregation, because at a minimum, that depreciation that we generate can offset the taxable income from the rental properties too. So not always, but yes, generally speaking. And the question is, if I accelerate depreciation, do I get a current tax benefit? Mm-hmm. Somehow.
I'm just calling it out right now, thinking about it. Is number one, I want to know what super profitable is to you, because I'm interested. But
yeah,
I'm thinking of everything I see online and social media, mm-hmm. and it's the people touting the cost segregation gains, and then in the same post talking about how they work 1 hour a week. So if you do the math, they're working 52 hours. That's not material participation. Because I want to call...
They must have a super profitable property then, right?
Because I kind of want to just call BS on it. How many people are working the 500 hours? Or more than their cleaner? See, I'm just calling it out. Like, do you feel confident, Amanda, that people are reaching these thresholds? Truly. While they are working a full-time W-2, while being parents, while being spouses... While being life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of hours, truthfully.
Yeah.
Can you do it?
I think you're right. If to say on social media that you only work, you know, 1 hour a week, that's very problematic. You know, I've seen, I've had clients say that, and I'm like, hey, please don't say that, because the IRS is watching for stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's just more of, you know, it's different, right? Maybe they're referring to I'm working 1 hour a week on this property, but I have a portfolio of real estate. When you talk about the short-term rental loophole or just anything in real estate, right? The tax savings isn't like, oh, I'll save $1,000 or $5,000. It's like tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars. So what we always tell our clients is you have to make sure you meet the hours requirements in reality when you're trying to utilize the loopholes. It's not going to be like, oh, wink, wink, I sort of didn't do it. You know, my sister did the hours for me. Because on audit, it is your responsibility to prove that the audits were done. And you can imagine if you're someone who wrote off $300,000 against your taxable income and you lose on an audit, then it's quite painful, right? It's the taxes, it's interest, it's also penalty on top of it. And, you know, when we do tax planning with clients, especially around short-term rental loophole, the hours and the activities is a key thing that we talk about throughout the year. You know, what qualifies, what doesn't qualify, what are you doing, what else can you do before the end of the year? And, you know, here we're talking about the minimum 500, minimum 100 hours more than anyone else. But just like in life, right, you can't always bet on just doing the minimum, because what if you're audited and you can't prove 30 minutes of your 100-hour log, right? So the more hours you have, the better it is. And I think, can you have the hours? It starts with, even on the acquisition side, which property do I buy that allows me to actually earn the hours? If it's a turnkey managed by someone else, that's a lot more difficult for my first property, at least, right? If I have a portfolio, mm-hmm. sure, maybe I have some local and the rest are away because I can group them together. But that for newer investors, yes, that is part of the investment decision, is what is that first property in? Can I actually earn the hours?
Yeah. Can you talk about what qualifies as an earned hour and what doesn't qualify as an earned hour?
Yeah. So For short-term rentals versus real estate professional, there's different definitions of what qualifies and what doesn't qualify. The most common mistake I see from meeting people all over is the CPA is not understanding that that is actually a difference. Mm. So like if your CPA is saying, hey, you can't do the short-term rental loophole because you make too much money, you work too many hours, or you're not a real estate professional, any of those three statements mean they don't understand what the loophole is. For short-term rental, we only care about material participation. So for material participation definition, the hours generally, or I guess the easiest way to look at it is hours that involve the day-to-day operations of the short-term rental properties that you own. So that would be furnishing, staging, right? Dealing with the cleaning crew, guest communications, all those kinds of things would be part of material participation. I also find it easier to talk about what is not material participation.
Yeah.
So preemptively to answer. So the things that are not material participation would be looking for properties, analyzing deals, learning about real estate, right? Taking real estate courses, masterminds, going to a conference. And the reason for that is because those things do not involve the day-to-day operations of a property that is owned. Now, alternatively, if I'm doing research on, you know, pricing, right, what's the best pricing structure for my existing property, we would argue that is material participation because that's how you optimize your profits. But if I'm just looking different markets, should I buy here, should I buy there? Usually those are not material participation.
Interesting.
That is actually very interesting.
I have to circle back. In your, let's define to you, what is a super profitable short-term rent?
You know, I think it differs from person to person. So for us, we look at the portfolio collectively. What I mean by that is somebody has a rental with $300,000 of taxable income, but they have a bunch of other ones that are net losses, then it doesn't matter even if one is profitable. But if I'm just saying, well, there's one property, I'm only looking at that one property, what do I think is profitable enough where a cost segregation might need to be factored in? I would say, and it gets hard to say because it depends on what that person's tax rate
is as well.
They have a high W-2 income, 37%. I would say super profitable would be like $50,000. Mm-hmm. If I don't want to pay taxes on $50,000 of income, I'm doing a cost set, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, super profitable for our clients. I think I've seen in last year, because we just finished 2024 taxes, maybe a property with $300,000 taxable income with regular depreciation. I felt that was a home run.
Yeah.
And again, for me, I think I'm looking at something different than cash flow. Most people look at cash flow.
Right.
We're looking at it, you know, after depreciation, like regular depreciation.
Sure.
That's when we say, okay, do we need more than regular depreciation to offset?
Well, I think you just said something really important that Sarah and I bring up very, very often is looking at that number is very different for every person, and especially when it comes to strategy. You know, you can hear things about cash flow, you can hear things about top line revenue, and it really does need to be siloed into the exact person and what their end goal they're going for. You know, because using the term super profitable, that could be so many different things to so many different people. And it goes back to, again, their overall wealth building strategy and how it fits in. And the wealth part might be they get to use the home with their family a couple of times a year. Mm-hmm. You know, there could be different goals there. So I do like that you're just bringing that back to you have to zoom out on a lot of these and understand. I think there's a lot of noise out there about everyone's individual numbers that people highlight reels. And it's like, we don't understand what everyone's, maybe they have a partner that has a W-2. Maybe they don't, you know, we don't understand all of the behind the scenes on what we see out there. So we have to stay really rooted in our own strategy and our own numbers.
Yeah. And I think beyond just every person's financial situation, it's also property specific too, right? $300,000 cash flow on a $600,000 property is like crazy amazing. If we're talking about a $6 million property, well, I mean, that's okay, right? Not super amazing. So you're right. And it's not just looking at the revenues. I know a lot of people talk about short-term rentals, like I made $500,000 on my property. But if by made, you mean, you know, just receipts, right? Bookings. That's very different than because what was your mortgage interest? What was your property tax? What was all the other, you know, management fees that you paid, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's really, for investors, I think it's really just about making sure you have the best deal that fits your budget, your lifestyle, what your tax strategy is.
Amanda, I want to get you on our team. You don't have to be on our team, but I want to see if you'll come on our team. We work with, specifically Annette and myself, we work with owner operators. So people who own their property, and for the most part, they maybe don't clean it, but they are the one messaging guests. They're messaging their cleaners.
They're doing the pricing.
They're doing all the operations, Amanda. Annette and I will get them into our world, and we'll have a call with them, and we kind of assess their business, where they're at. And I would say 90% of them, Amanda, they don't have any sort of bookkeeping. Not a software. Like, they don't really even have spreadsheets. So talk to me about if an owner operator who has some potentially could take advantage of these tax benefits, if they're not tracking their revenue and expenses in a way that a CPA or an IRS can, you know, make sense of, what does that mean for that investor? Are they kind of wasting their time, or what is that? What would you say to someone who came to you and they're like, but I don't have any books, so good luck?
Yeah. I mean, what I always tell people like to talk about tax savings, right? And I would say that if your community is mostly owner operators in the short-term rental space, most of them should be using the short-term rental loophole, right? So most people should be paying very little tax. I mean, I don't say very little tax because they might be making $1 million out of their W-2.
Right.
But they should have very significant tax savings, especially if they're continuing to grow and scale their portfolio. So I really like to talk about that, right? Made $1 million, paid no tax. Made $1 million, paid, we'll save $300,000 tax. That all sounds great. Nobody likes to talk about bookkeeping. I call it the bad B word, because when you talk about it, people are like you said, they're like, oh, yeah, I don't want to show you. I'm very embarrassed because of what I have or don't have. But the reality is your tax planning is only as good as your numbers, right? I can't help you plan. Like, did you make $100,000? Did you lose $10,000? I don't know, right? And so I think bookkeeping is super, super important. It doesn't mean everybody has to like get QuickBooks and, do all of the things, but at a minimum, you have to find a system that works for you, that you're able to track your rental income, rental expenses, and business expenses, like all the overhead stuff, right, that are associated with it. And the easiest way to do that, like the first step in solving that problem, is to simply have a different bank account and a different credit card that you use exclusively for your real estate. So if you do nothing at all, you're not going to do spreadsheets, not going to do QuickBooks, at least have a different bank and credit card, because that will make your life so much easier at tax time. You can refer to those, and you still have to do the summary, right, of what did I spend. But I think for best practice, we tell people you need to have monthly books, not just for taxes, not just for planning, but as a business owner. I want to know, how is my property? How's every property doing so that I can make changes during the year? Versus a lot of people, they don't even know until the following year. Like when we do tax returns, like, wow, this property did really bad. And they're kind of like, oh, I didn't notice because my other property is doing great, right? So a lot of bleeding of money because you can't make decisions without numbers.
Right. Ooh, I love that. I'm going to take that clip and we're just going to
make decisions.
I'm just going to replay it over and over.
And I do. This is a shout out. We are partners with them, but everyone, we will put in the show notes. We bank with, we use Relay. And so we'll put our link there, and it is, you do have to get approved, but you don't have to go into a physical location. You can get your business banking up and running. It's online. It's so super friendly, for user friendly. I love logging in. I understand everything. I've been able to do everything that we need to do. Sarah and I have used them for over 4 years now. And so I just want to share that there are easy solutions, and it's, and don't quote me on all of this, but right now, the business bank accounts are free, So I just want to share that. I know a lot of accounts at a lot of local banks, you have to pay for monthly, just, let's say $12-15 just to have your money there. So it's a platform. It's a financial platform, Relay, that partners with a bank. Mm-hmm. But please check them out. So I love that, Amanda, because I made that mistake because I just wanted to get my short-term rental up and running, that I was, mixing thing. This is a long, long time ago, but it's not fun to sort that out, you know? So I love that. You can't make decisions without numbers.
And I think Relay allows you to do like sub-account, right? Property by property, which is huge because whether we're talking about decision-making as a an owner of multiple properties or from a tax reporting perspective, because on the tax return, you have to report income and expenses by property. So having it split out naturally from the banking side, again, for those of you who are not even going to do spreadsheets, that at least helps you easier at the end of the year to be able to split things out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just for me, it's such an interesting decision to find the property, figure out how to purchase the property, decide on short-term rentals as your wealth building because it is not passive. It is quite active. It is, especially if you want to participate. I mean, 500 hours isn't nothing. And then to do all of that and not to track what's coming in and going out, it's interesting. It's an interesting decision.
Yeah. I think it's just come down to systems. People always ask me like, well, what should I be using? You know, do you like Relay? Do you like QuickBooks? Do you like Stessa? Hospital? Like all the different things. And what I tell people is it's not about what I like. I can tell you what the output should be. Here are the things you should be tracking. It should be property by property. But the methodology of how you do it, it's just got to be something that works for you. It comes down to systems. What is the type, what is the method and system that I will use consistently? You know, do I like apps? Do I like, do I just like paper or Excel? Mm-hmm. And of course, if you have a bookkeeper, then that's easy, right? It's whatever your bookkeeper wants to use. I always tell people, if your bookkeeper is on QuickBooks, use QuickBooks. Yep. Don't make them learn something crazy because things will go wrong, you know, just and they have it in their natural habitat.
They have an easy out too. I've done that before. I've had bookkeepers like, oh, I want to use this new trendy thing. And then they just, you know, they're like, don't understand how to use it. I don't know how to pull that report. I'm not spending time to learn it. Or you can pay me the by hour to learn it. And I was like, yeah. Then I just switched everything over to QuickBooks. So I agree. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Amanda, you mentioned something earlier that, you know, if your, I forget what your example was, but if your CPA says this about material participation, you have to be a real estate professional, then they probably don't understand the tax code. So how could someone, Amanda, know if their CPA is a good CPA or a not so good CPA? Do you have any other good indicators like that? Because tax law is, it's nuanced. I mean, I don't know how y'all keep up with it and keep it all straight. So how can we protect ourselves as real estate investors from getting bad advice?
Gosh, well, I'll say the three things again, right? If you're missing short-term rental, if your CPA says one of these three things, then it's a sign they don't know what they're talking about. One is they say you make too much money to get any benefit from short-term rental loophole. And not a thing. Don't care how many hours, how much money you make. The second is they say you work too many hours at your job or business. Again, don't care how many hours you do at all on anything. All I care about is your hours in short-term rentals. What was the third one? I don't remember now.
Wasn't it about like real estate professional?
Real estate professional. Yeah. So if your CPA says, oh, you can't do it because you can't qualify as real estate professional, then that's the third warning sign. Because again, you don't have to be a real estate professional. That's why we call it a loophole.
Right.
Don't have to be a real estate professional. Okay. So those are the three things. I think most people know whether they're working with the right CPA or not, right? You kind of just have, you kind of know, is your CPA someone who, you know, gives you strategies, right? Or is your CPA someone that you can hardly find? You know, you email or call them and they just like don't really respond for a long time. Are you always the one bringing them ideas? You know, you're like listening to podcasts and asking them, oh, can I do this? Can I do cosplay? Can I do this? And they basically tell you a bunch of no's and why you can't do it. I always tell people, does your CPA tell you more about what you cannot do versus what you can do? Because there's always a can, right? Can I use real estate losses? Well, no, you work a full-time job, but you can invest in short-term rentals, right? Mm. Like, can I pay my kids? Well, I mean, can I write off my kids? No, but you can hire them if they can do legitimate work in your business. So it's really identifying somebody who's more strategic rather than sort of just telling you no all the time.
Yeah.
That certainly is a problem, though. People saying, like, they can't find.
Can we pause on the kids? That's another thing that's all out there about hiring your kids. How do you see short-term rental hosts hiring their kids in a way that, if they got audited, would be okay? and pass.
Hiring your kids is the same as hiring anybody else, right? So there's nothing the tax world that says you can't hire your kids or your parents or your sibling. What they do look for is just making sure that's legitimate. So when you hire your kids, it's just making sure that they are doing the work, the right type of work, and you're paying them the right compensation. So just because it's my kid doesn't mean I can pay him $15,000, right? Because that's the optimal amount that I don't have to pay. So you have to say, okay, what is it that they're doing for my short-term rental? And short-term rental is a really great asset class within real estate, actually, to pay your kids. Turnovers, stocking stuff, right? Stocking the pantry. And I mean, a lot of those things are the ones that kids can help you do, especially if your property is local. And so, again, we can't just pay them whatever we want for the write-off. We have to arrive at what is that reasonable compensation. So if I didn't pay my kids, but I paid one of their friends to do the same thing, what is that amount that I would naturally be paying them? So when it comes to kids, we just want to make sure our documentation is available, right? Because that's when obviously you can see IRS saying, wait, how do I know you didn't just give your kids money for video games and call it a write-off?
Being able to document is the name of the game. Anything else our audience should know before the end of the year that you're talking about with your clients that we haven't asked you yet?
I mean, year end is a huge planning opportunity for, you know, virtually everyone. And I mean, obviously, we always recommend the earlier you plan in the year, the more options you have, right? So if you're someone with $300,000 of income in January, you can map out what you need to do to get it to close to zero. At this point in time, if you haven't planned at all, you're just now looking to plan, there are fewer things you can do. If you already own a short-term rental, obviously firm up your hours, right? We don't want to just get to 500 or 100. We want to be more than the minimum, right? We want to be like A-plus student. So do, you know, make sure you do as much as you can to earn the hours, document all of that. If you're new to short-term rentals, the key is placing a property in service. You know, just because you bought a property doesn't mean we can take depreciation. It has to be in operation before the end of the year if you're trying to get a tax benefit for 2025. And that typically means, you know, furnished, staged, listed, preferably two guest turns, two bookings for this year. So you can show the average guest stay is 7 days or less. So those are two really key things. The one thing you don't have to do before the end of the year is cost segregation. Mm. So a lot of people are confused about that. Like, oh my gosh, I got to make sure I did this before the end of the year. The study itself is just an engineer looking at your building, and the numbers will be provided to your CPA. Your CPA will follow on the tax return. So the study itself could be done before you file 2025 taxes, right? We don't have to rush on that piece of it. It's more of just making sure the property's in service and you have the right hours for it.
Amanda, I want to talk about your firm specifically. What is it like working with your firm? Do people work with you directly? Do you have a team? If so, how do you keep your team educated on everything that's going on in the tax world?
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. Most people come to us knowing that they'll be in real estate or already in real estate. So we have very few people that are like, I don't know if I like real estate. You know, most people are kind of like, I already own real estate or I'm about to own real estate. And most of them come to us because they need help with tax planning. So I have a local CPA. They don't help me. They don't do real estate. I just need an expert to tell me and teach me implement like the real estate piece of it. So we do work with clients nationwide, a whole spectrum of new investors all the way to people who do real estate syndications and things like that. So we have different service tiers depending on like what the need is, because everyone's need is a little bit different depending on how much or how little you are involved in the real estate business. I do take clients personally still. For us internally, we kind of look at the complexity of the client to determine who is the best fit for that person. But yeah, a lot of our CPAs have been with us for over 10 years, wow, some over 15 years. And a lot of them probably know more than me when it comes to like the nitty gritties and the tax stuff, because they're, you know, kind of in the trenches and working with clients too. So yeah, training is an ever present thing in our life. Like tax code changes all the time, as we just said, right? One big, beautiful bill changed so many things. We touched on like three out of the 2000 things. So yeah, for us, you know, any kind of downtime is always done in training. We have external, internal. We always have a chat thread about, oh my gosh, I just learned about this. I think people find it surprising, like, wow, you guys are like experts in real estate tax. But it's like, no, for us, we often find different strategies. Because we'll be talking to a client about how they invested something. And then it's like, oh, I never thought about that's how you can invest. And here's kind of the strategy around that as to how you can make it better, you know?
I want to just, before we wrap up, how is AI impacting accounting and CPA? And can our listeners like use ChatGPT to ask tax questions? What are you advising your clients when it comes to just AI and taxes? What have you seen?
So I think it's a little bit different. So we tell our clients don't use AI for tax, but it's because they have us, right? So right. We tell them, just ask us. We'll give you the answer instead of asking AI. But, you know, we also test a lot. I mean, we're subscribed to a lot of tax AI software as well. So not like ChatGPT, but actual AI designed for CPAs. I think it's been helpful in having us be pointed to a direction to find the answers sooner or quicker. But I would say the majority of the time, the immediate answer from AI, even the tax specific AI that we purchase per user for in our firm, are often incorrect. So, but I do think it's helpful instead of, you know, before we have to like go to an index and like search and drill down, this can point us to a section faster, but it still does take that person to actually read it and come to a conclusion on whether that's relevant or if it's accurate.
Sure.
So that's the unfortunate part. I'm hoping there's very quick way to get that up to speed.
Yeah. And that might be a question, listeners, that you can ask your CPA this year as you're interviewing. It's like, how are you using AI in your business? Because I would hate for our listeners, like I didn't even know that. I'm assumed it. I just have never thought about it, that there is tax specific AI. And so I do think you want to make sure that your professional is keeping up with the times. And even as Amanda said, hey, they're using it. They're not, you know, they're trust but verifying it. But I think that is something to ask your real estate professional also, is how are they starting to implement it in some way, shape, or form in their business? Because they will be left behind if they're not starting to use it somewhere. So.
Yeah, it's funny, in our firm, our managers are the ones who are using AI more, and they don't really want to roll it out to like the associates. They're like, oh, you guys are new. I want you to like learn it the right way, like manually research, manually do everything. At first I was like, but I pay for everybody to use it, you know, just everybody use it. But I think now I think about it, I'm like, yeah, that's true. You know, we all came up learning like how to research. So kind of makes sense that we just, you know, make sure everybody here kind of learns ground up how to do it. So, but yeah, I mean, AI, if you're just using ChatGPT, just be very careful because it will lie to you. We've tested it many times or asked it questions. They'll actually give us references to tax law, like court cases with names, years, and all that. And then when we verify, try to pull it up, it doesn't exist. So we ask like, is that a right tax court case? And like, oh, no, that's not the right one. Here's another
one.
And we'll pull that one. Like, oh, that doesn't exist. But it sounds very legit in the way it phrases it, giving you the citation. So that's the kind of scary stuff. Again, verify with your CPA. Mm-hmm. ChatGPT is not your CPA.
No, it's a GPT, not CPA.
All right, everyone. We will put Amanda's firm's information in the show notes. If you do not have a CPA you know, like, and trust, please, I would at least put Amanda and her firm on your list of people to interview, because it's such an important aspect, because our audience, because you are all owner operators for the most part. This is such an important aspect of your short-term rental business. Amanda, thank you so much for once again sharing your expertise with us. You're such a joy to learn from and to connect with. So we hope you'll be back with us. With that, I am Sarah Kerr-Kane.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are.
Thanks for visiting.
Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for additional information about today's episode. And please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week.